Well, now it gives me great pleasure to be joined by Brian Hughes, who's a consultant solicitor at the Shenfield-based solicitor firm Rayner Hughes, and aspiring writer to boot. So welcome to Phoenix FM, Brian.
Well, thank you very much, Scott. It's very kind of you to invite me.
Oh, we're delighted, I can tell you. Now, I think I'm right in saying that the book you're currently working on is about your life experiences, and not just as a solicitor. And one of the chapters covers the relatively unknown historical events that have occurred in and around Billericay, and notably the consequences that flowed nationally from the death of a Mr. and Mrs. Basil Brooks and the dispute over their wills between their executors and the Inland Revenue. So come on, Brian, without giving too much away, you've got to tell us a little bit about this.
Well, let me set the scene for you, Scott. Mr. and Mrs. Basil Brooks lived at Burstead Lodge in Billericay High Street, and he was wealthy and influential. He was also a JP and a very important figure in the community. He and his wife decided to go on holiday in 1953, late in 53. On their homeward flight from Singapore, their plane touched down at Ciampino Airport, Rome, early in the morning of 10th January 1954, in order to refuel. The plane was a de Havilland Comet, the first jet-propelled passenger aircraft in the world. It was a beautifully designed aeroplane, which would have been able to compete strongly with any American or European rival. The plane took off for Heathrow at about 10 a.m., and between the islands of Elba and Monte Cristo suffered explosive decompression and fell out of the sky. Mr. and Mrs. Brooks were killed instantaneously. Now, in their respective wills, Mr. and Mrs. Basil Brooks had put the words, "If my wife or husband does not survive me, I leave everything to my children." The executors of the estate of Basil Brooks took the view that because the deaths of Mr. and Mrs. Basil Brooks were simultaneous, Mrs. Brooks couldn't have survived her husband. Accordingly, estate duty would be payable on his estate alone. "Not so," said the revenue. "Mrs. Brooks did survive her husband, as far as we're concerned, and you will therefore have to pay estate duty on her estate as well." "Well, that's nonsense," said the executors. "How can Mrs. Brooks have lived any longer than her husband when they were in an aircraft which literally exploded thousands of feet in the air?" And so they entered into litigation with HM Inland Revenue and took their argument to the House of Lords. And what do you think happened, Scott?
They lost. I mean, isn't it generally taken that the husband predeceases the wife in the event of a major accident?
Well, yep. The Inland Revenue are correct, said their lordships. "We must have a rule in this sort of case. From the legal perspective, we have to determine that one of them survived the other. It's impossible for us to say who survived who, so we therefore have to determine that the wife survived her husband because women have greater life expectancies than men." Well, of course, the Inland Revenue rubbed their hands at that because they were going to take duty out of two estates. The costs of fighting the Inland Revenue after paying the two sets of estate duty exhausted the monies left in the two estates, and the children were obliged to sell Burstead Lodge. And that's why the property is now owned by Essex County Council and used as a public library.
So if that being the case, there's got to be a way that you can avoid that happening, surely?
Well, yes. From that moment on, every solicitor in the land who'd not already done so made sure that the wording of his client's wills read, "If my wife or husband does not survive me by 28 days, and then I leave everything to my children." That thereby avoided the fate that befell the estates of Mr. and Mrs. Basil Brooks. Now, if married heterosexual couples don't make wills and die simultaneously, the wife is deemed to have survived the husband. In the case of same-sex marriages, no one yet knows what the rule is going to be, but it's more than likely that the older will be deemed to have died first, and the same will apply to civil partnerships that are recognised by the state. So there you have it. Please make sure that in your wills you have, if my husband or wife or partner survives me by 28 days. That's the essential wording that you have to put in.
But what I don't quite understand here is that if, even taking it as the law stands, if the, they take it that the husband had died first, then the entire estate would have passed to his wife, and when she died, the estate would have been passed to the children. So why would there still be a double whammy out of the inland revenue?
Well, because he had money and she had money. It wasn't joint ownership.
Mm. Mm.
That's the reason. He was a wealthy guy. I think he was a broker in the City of London.
Yeah, yeah.
With considerable assets.
It's quite incredible. You've got to be so careful, haven't you?
Well, you have. And my advice to everyone is, for goodness sake, consult a solicitor who knows what he's doing about this sort of thing. Because I've seen so many cases of people who've tried to make their own wills or not had wills at all. They come to grief in the fullness of time. They've got to be careful.
Now, okay, let's just go back to the book that you're writing. Do you have a title for it yet? And and how long will it be before you actually get to publish it, do you think?
Well, I've got about three or four more chapters to write. I've done about 14 chapters, surprisingly.
Wow.
And they're about interesting subjects that have occurred during my life. My secretary, rather jokingly, said, well, you've heard of the life of Brian. Why don't you make it the life of the other Brian?
That's very clever.
I'm not sure about that.
I think it's very good. I think you should give her a bottle of wine for that one.
Oh, yes. Yes. If you're listening, Karen, I will do that.
I've landed you in it then. Now, hopefully, you're going to be popping in quite regularly to give us a few legal tips, aren't you? So hopefully, you'll be able to give us an update then on the publication date. But in the meantime, give us a few teasers of what you've got subjects that you might have coming up.
As part of our professional training, we have to keep up to date with events in our particular fields. And I recently attended a seminar where we were brought up to date on things like boundary disputes, shared drives, noisy animals, and all that sort of thing. And in fact, in my many years of experience as a solicitor, shared drives and boundary disputes crop up with regularity and always cause consternation and upset to the owners of the properties that are involved.
Now, okay, let me just... I know that this is going to be something you're going to be talking about in a little bit more depth later on, but perhaps I could just bowl something to you on a boundary dispute.
Oh, thank
right?
you.
Sorry about this.
Okay.
We had a problem some time ago where we live where... some children, there was a boundary fence that is their fence. It came down.
Yeah.
Because it was a rented property, the people who were living there didn't want to put a fence up. So the kids were running all over our garden.
Yeah.
So we then put a fence up, but of course we put it in just inside our boundary.
Yeah.
We then notified, when we found out who the landlords were, notified them that we had to do that, and indeed another party also did. They've never replied, so have we now permanently lost that inch of space that was ours?
Well, most properties, in fact nearly all properties in this area, have a registered title. And the registered title will define the boundary on what we call the filed plan. There is a plan that goes with every title. Unfortunately, the red edging on most of these filed plans cover about 18 inches. And it's therefore difficult, without seeing the original land registry plan kept by the land registry itself, to determine exactly where the boundary is. But you've done the right thing in putting up the boundary fence at your expense in the absence of the landlord doing it. You might be able to get some compensation or recompense from the person who should have maintained the boundary fence, but quite frankly, in my long experience, what you've done, do it, you've done it, let it rest.
Well, that's what we would do, but what I was more concerned about is if they decided to put their own fence up, they could rip ours down, presumably, or not.
No, it depends whether you've done the whole fence or just a part of it.
No, it's just the fence.
Just a section.
It is the section it is effective. They held the whole fence on that one section.
No, the remaining sections will indicate the actual line of the boundary.
Yeah.
So you've got no problem there.
Right, right. Okay, fair enough. Well, I thought I'd bowl you that fast ball with topspin.
Yes.
Sorry about that. Have you any idea when you'll be able to come back and see us again?
Well, I await an invitation.
Oh, no, you don't have to stand on ceremony. So maybe we could look at about a month's time.
A month's time would be fine.
Which subject do you think you'll be covering? Do you think you'll be doing the noisy animals, or have you got something else lined up?
I think shared drives is probably an interesting one.
Right. Oh, well, we'll look forward to that. Okay. Thank you very much indeed.
It's a great pleasure.
It's been really good. Thank you.